Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, that he may have mercy on him. Let us hear Dr. Newman at this time.
I should like to speak for all of our seminary family this preliminary word, a word of appreciation for the active and responsible part our student government plays in the life of our institution. I think its democracy is itself a very remarkable example of what ought to be among those who are together under these circumstances. And the lesson this morning is from that first chapter of the memorable Sermon on the Mount. In the language of Jesus, "And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell." This is Friday, 1 week after Good Friday and Easter. In the degree that we are serious in our purposes as disciples of Jesus Christ, in recent days we have stood again in the shadow of these imponderables. In our mind's eye, we have watched them lay wicked hands on him and lead him away to Golgotha. And we have stood near enough to hear him say once more as he went to that cross, "No man taketh my life from me." We were brought from that circumstance to the dim light of an early Easter morning. Standing there, we were overwhelmed with its sense of victory. But, having tried once again to understand it all, we are the more convinced in the midst of this most recent commemoration of these things that we have not yet come so far as the outer court of this mystery. Perhaps we have derived some satisfaction in using our own terms to restate its paradoxes. For with reverent devotion, once more, we have said, it was his sacrifice, and at the same time, it was his own achievement. Among the many impressions, then, that we have received in recent days, one impression is quite conspicuous. We have the idea that whatever it was that he was engaged upon, which we have so recently thought about again, we ourselves are tremendously involved in that undertaking. We confess in our better moments, we helped nail him to that tree. But also we have the impression that it was on our account that he entered into his passion. Increasingly, we have come to perceive that the privilege of eternal life has been made both possible and available to us in that passion. Our hope is built on our confidence that that cross, which issued in an empty tomb, has efficacy for all who put their trust in Jesus Christ. But there is another question. What of this life of mine which has been purchased at so great a price? We hear him gladly when he says, "And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." Do we listen when he goes on to say, "If any man would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me"? On Friday, after Good Friday, Easter, we stand, as it were, in that moment that one has called the middle place. That middle place between explication and application. That middle place between faith and practice. That middle place between Christ as an efficient cause, effectual unto eternal life, and the consequences of that cause in the responsible walk of our way as children of God. If what we enjoy of the benefits of Christ's sacrifice may be said to go one step beyond a mere rescue operation, there is expected some measure of sacrifice on our part too. In fact, it could be said, with the risk of oversimplification, we are saved by His sacrifice. A saved life in us consists in our sacrifice. In this that we look at today, this Friday after Good Friday and Easter, we hear Christ say, "If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out. If thy right hand offend thee, cut it off." Whatever such language as this might mean, unless we are disposed to spiritualize it into mere meaninglessness, it would certainly seem to say some things are expected of us also. Jesus may have been making reference in this principle, which he has given in a sort of axiomatic and repeated phrase, he may have been giving reference to an observable principle in the universe, that which we may know for ourselves. It is to be observed in the natural world frequently. That which might be summed up by the remark, conservation through concentration. For it is that the husbandman does when he prunes his grape arbor in the spring. He comes to a grapevine and issues to it something a bit stronger than an admonition when he severs some of its branches. He says, so to speak, desist in your vine-making enterprise and concentrate upon the matter of grape making, and the grapevine often follows his commandment. In the more human dimensions of our experience and observation, we know this principle of conservation through concentration. In the matter of the language that we employ, we may use good words, but if they become cluttered with trivialities and senselessness, even the good things we have to say will be lost sight of. So it is in the use of time or money. To go beyond the budget is to run the risk of losing that which has been budgeted also. I think if we were anxious to concentrate upon such a fairly obvious and relatively easy principle as this, we would like to quote Paul in affirmation of our thought, for he did say on one occasion, "This one thing I do," so much as to say that he was a bit impatient with being asked to do many things. However, this language is much sharper than that. If thy right eye offend thee, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, lest consequences much more serious shall follow. If thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. Jesus here seems to say that as one sallies forth into a way in a world like this, there are several kinds of things going on, and some of those things are markedly different from other things, and one engages upon them promiscuously at his own risk. That one of the chief duties in life is to distinguish between things that are right and things that are wrong, and go to any extent necessary to make sure that one is engaging upon that which is right. If at this moment we take very seriously his admonition, perhaps we shall come to understand a bit more that other word which comes today, abhor that which is evil, even as you cling to that which is good. Perhaps in the severity of this graphic commandment that Jesus brings, he is but complimenting that other statement which has always stood along with his commandments as a bewildering thing. Be ye therefore perfect, said Jesus, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Here is an obligation pressed down upon Christian experience. An obligation as inexorable as it is impossible of human realization. It is laid upon us by him as an obligation nonetheless. To fail in its achievement is not to be relieved of its obligation at all. Instead, we have long since learned, each one of us, I'm sure, in his own way, that God, who demands that we be perfect, forgives us wherein we fail in that endeavor unto such perfection. Thereby he does not relieve us of that obligation. He rather draws us much more closely to himself and intensifies the privilege of the walk of uprightness by his side. If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, cast it from thee. For it is much better, Jesus said, to lose one's right eye than to lose the whole way in one's life.
Our seminary covenant is a solemn compact into which we enter together as a seminary family. Will you look in the back of your hymnals in the pockets and find copies of our covenant so that we might thoughtfully and with dedication read the words of it together? You will note that the covenant is divided into four phases, representing four different phases of our seminary life. Let us begin by reading together in unison the section entitled Regarding Our School. We, the students of Southeastern Seminary, covenant to express our devotion to Christ through our common life. We will recognize our responsibility for our school work and to all the persons connected with the seminary. Our words, attitudes, and actions will be motivated by a desire to express the love of Christ. We will never, by outright deceit or by implication, seek to obtain credit for any work which we have not done. We will be courteous and helpful to fellow students in class, on the campus, and in extracurricular activities. We will manifest an attitude of understanding and cooperation toward members of the faculty, administration, trustees, and staff. We will seek to bring all our relationships with the seminary, both during school days and after graduation, into harmony with the Christian faith and the Christian ethic. Let us read the section entitled Regarding Our Church. When not engaged in an official relationship with a church, we will accept the responsibility of membership in a church where we can serve. We will consistently participate in the fellowship through corporate worship and the sharing of Christian faith and service. In seeking a pastoral or other official relationship with a church, we will be guided by the highest principles of Christian conduct. We will show primary concern for the welfare of the church and the interest of Christ's kingdom. We will not be led by selfish ambition into a spirit of worldly competition, a display of vanity and pride, or anything that would bring reproach upon the name of Christ. When we accept any call to service in a church, we will accept our responsibilities as a sacred trust, always mindful of our obligation to Christ, to the membership of the church, to our families, and to the seminary. When a ministry has been fulfilled, we will terminate our relations with the church in a manner favorable to the best interest of the fellowship and our successor. We recognize our relationship to fellow ministers whom we accept as Christian brothers and as fellow laborers. We will endeavor to cooperate with the pastors of surrounding churches in mutual interest and lend our assistance to retired and other ministers who are not currently serving in a pastorate. We will share in the life and work of our denomination. Any criticism will be given in love and for a constructive purpose. We will strive to make a worthy contribution to our denomination on every level, and shall at the same time seek to cultivate in our area a proper understanding and appreciation of the student pastor. Let us read together the next section regarding our family. We will seek to maintain a Christian atmosphere and a genuine partnership in our family. This partnership will derive its strength from an abiding reverence for Christ as the principle of life. Mindful of such reverence, we will strive to meet successfully the peculiar pressures of seminary life. In this attitude, we will be inspired to practice active love, fidelity, truthfulness, consideration, kindness, and forgiveness, gratefully aware of the sacrifices made by the members of our family in the interest of our seminary training. We will seek to make the most of our educational opportunities. Since we are all members of the larger seminary family, in periods of crisis, we will assist our brethren through proper channels. While in the seminary, we will interpret every experience as an opportunity for our families to become uniquely fitted for Christian service. Regarding our community, let us read this section in unison. We will recognize and accept our responsibilities as Christian citizens in the Seminary Community of Learning, the Wake Forest Community, and our Community of Work. We will endeavor to participate in civic activities which strengthen community life. Constructive community projects, community improvement measures, and local charities will be the objects of our concern. We will strive to share in the governmental and administrative concerns of the community by accepting a responsible share in the duties of citizenship. We will participate in local elections, cooperate with law enforcement and governmental officials, regard the laws of the community, and share our time, energies, and resources with others for the common good of all. We will practice integrity in economic relationships. We will refuse to seek special privileges and be prompt in the payment of loans and debts. We will strive to support our local community in a cooperative spirit. We will endeavor to promote the educational life of our community, support the public schools, cooperate in matters of mutual concern, and participate in any improvements designed to lift the level of life among us. We will treat every member of our community as a person, seeking to be courteous and considerate in all relationships. We will strive to bear a Christian witness and hold an attitude of goodwill toward those of differing religious persuasion. All these things and others we will strive to attain under God in order that our school, our churches, our homes, and our community may be Christian.